Elena Burnett of the Savannah College of Art and Design had a review of the film at the drive-in. She says it would be easy for a documentary about a struggling drive-in movie theater to emphasize the struggle, to dramatize the fight, to keep it alive, and to glorify the heroes who continue to resist the unfair, changing times. But that's not what drive-ins are all about. It certainly is not what the Mahoning Drive-In in Lehighton, Pennsylvania is about. In At the Drive-In, director Alexander Monelli allows the joyous, quirky personalities of the theater's employees and longtime customers to tell a story that celebrates a love for movies, one so strong that the theater is able to endure almost anything. The self-proclaimed alternative drive-in screens movies only in vintage 35mm film, the lower the budget, the better, on the same projectors running since the theater's opening in 1949. One of the theater's runners, Virgil, remarks that the beauty of 35mm film is that it is not pristine, not spotless. It's messed up in its own special way. The same could be said about the Mahoning. It's clear the place's magic rubbed off on Monelli during his dedicated quest of capturing extensive footage throughout the Mahoning's 2016 season. It yields a cast of characters whose pure love of movies makes them quit their jobs, drive 6.5 hours, or buy Windex in bulk to ensure a clear view of the big screen. Each one of them odd, yet endearing and inspiring. Punctuated by stunning shots of the rural beauty that surrounds the towering white screen and a timeline of the theater's events through rotating displays under the red arrow marquee, the film paints a complete portrait of an institution not stuck in the past or challenged by the future, but one that provides a temporary escape from the present. It amplifies the theater's infectious energy, leaving you itching to watch the film from the front seat of your hand-me-down high school ride and leave you wondering if you've ever truly experienced a movie without it. A review by Elena Burnett for SCAD, the Savannah College of Art and Design, in November 2017 of At the Drive-In. Alex Monelli is a video producer and video production manager at Franklin and Marshall in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and an award-winning filmmaker. At the Drive-In has been receiving great notices wherever it screens, and now it is coming to the small screen. WVIA-TV will broadcast At the Drive-In a number of times in August, beginning August 2nd. Alex Monelli, a native of northeastern Pennsylvania, paid a visit with his dad to the WVIA studios to talk with us about his ties to our area and At the Drive-In.
I went to Abington Heights, and I was into sports a lot as a kid, and then around 8th grade is when I started to discover more creative stuff, you know, writing and just anything visual. And 9th grade is when I pretty much solidified that it's going to be filmmaking. Now, I had made movies when I was younger. My dad, who's here next to me, actually filmed my first movie, which was an Indiana Jones spoof. I called myself Alex Jones, kind of like his, I guess like a distant relative to Indiana Jones. And, you know, I've always just loved the magic of movies. And I think this documentary kind of supports that. It kind of discusses and goes into the magic of movies, and not just the movies themselves, but where you watch them, how you absorb them and all that.
And you were watching things that maybe some of your fellow schoolmates weren't watching, right?
Yeah, for sure. My dad, he definitely, it was funny. They let me watch almost anything. I've told the story many times, you know, coming home from school in first grade, my mom had surprised me and rented Friday the 13th Part 9 and had it ready for me on my desk as a surprise when I got home from first grade. But, you know, we would watch action movies with Jean-Claude Van Damme and you know, he'd be killing people and there'd be blood. But whenever the sex scene would come on, that's when he would change the channel.
There are limits.
Yes, yeah. So it was all, you know, Van Damme ripping some guy's head off is fine, but, you know,
You could have been in those studies indicating that there is no causal effect between young people and their watching of violence and various media.
Yeah, I don't know. I think just my temperament has always just been very even keeled. And I asked my parents, I was like, why did you let me watch, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street when I was in kindergarten? And their response was just, you liked it. You just sat there and watched it as if it was, you know, Mr. Rogers. So, and I guess, you know, some kids enjoy it. They can handle it. Others probably might not be able to. So I've never said it's the way you should raise your child. But for me, it seemed to work.
When you were so young and watching films, by osmosis, were you picking up things like jump cuts and the way the narrative can unfold?
A little bit. I think if you look at the early stuff I made when I was in high school, you could see there was some film technique there. There was an understanding of this is better in a close-up. You know, this is better if you're dollying or moving the camera. And I think that just came from watching so many movies that I had all of those camera movements, all of those little details just sort of stuck in my subconscious somewhere.
And there are all kinds of films. And as you suggest, the action films, Indiana Jones and mm-hmm. that sort of thing. Were you game to try all of it, or were you drawn in a particular direction?
Well, in high school, it was more Steven Spielberg and that kind of stuff. I mean, I know that's sort of a cliche answer, but it was when I got to college is really when I started to watch foreign films, silent films. You know, I got into Buster Keaton and Charlie Chaplin in college, which, you know, I feel like a 15-year-old today would have no idea who they even are. But I think it's important if storytelling or filmmaking is what you're interested in, you know, you should at least watch what the classics are. You don't have to like them, but at least look at them, you know? I actually fell in love with them, and I realized movies weren't that much different. You know, we would watch some Billy Wilder movies from like the 30s and 40s, and I remember thinking, wow, like this is interesting dialogue even for today. Like if I saw this in a movie today, I would be interested in it. So, I mean, I loved his movies. But yeah, I mean, you know, I went and studied film and watched a bunch of, like, we had classes where it was like, okay, we're going to watch a movie and then you have to write a paper about it. And I know people might say, oh, that's so easy. Like, you know, I'm doing all this other math and science, but it isn't easy because it's not just writing your opinion about it. It's trying to understand, you know, okay, what did Orson Welles mean when he framed a certain shot a certain way? You know, what does that suggest? Why is he doing it that way instead of a wide shot? So understanding all of that was fun. It's like analytical, which you sort of then bring into production. That's how you kind of learn and establish your own style from watching others in a way.
And the credits on this film show that you are it. You're the director and the producer and the editor and so on. So you have experienced all of that in the smaller films that you do and the work you do at Franklin and Marshall, yes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this film was sort of an experiment in a way. I kind of devised a way of working that I like, shooting documentaries, where I could do it myself. And it's not for any other reason other than I like to do it. I like shooting. I like editing. I like it all. So I know a lot of times it's like, well, you got to get someone else to shoot your film or someone else to edit your film. And it's like, if you love doing it, why not? So, and I'm a little control freakish, but not too bad. So I just feel like it eliminates the need for relying on outside variables. I know I will be there every day. You know, I don't have to worry, you know, is my crew going to show up on time? Are they going to be ready to go? So it eliminates all of that worry. It just makes it very intimate, you, the camera, and the subject, what you're filming. Because they're going to be there. You know, you're just following them around. So it's not like an actor, you're calling them up being like, well, you know, is this amount of money right? Are you going to be here at this? It's they're going to be there because that's their life that you're following. So I kind of fell into this mode of working through making short documentaries at Franklin and Marshall College, which is where I work in the communications office there. So I wanted to see, can I do that for 90 minutes? Can I sustain it for more than like a 4 to 5 minute short film? And, you know, it took me over a year to shoot, and, you know, I was editing the whole time, and then probably another 5 or 6 months of editing after shooting, and I had a cut. I mean, it's weird because I got so, and I mean, that's the one negative about doing everything is you get so familiar with the film and with the story. So sometimes I'm like, I loved this 6 months ago, but do I still love it? Does this still work? So in that sense, I did show people like first cuts, which I think is very important. Like, you can still edit your own film and do everything, but I think you should at least show somebody, because sometimes you get lost, the trees and from the forest, you know, that whole thing. So that was helpful. And I showed it to some very talented filmmakers who gave me very direct reactions. Because you show it to your friends, they're just going to say, oh, this is great. You know, they're not going to tell you, well, I was bored there. So I showed it to a few people, and that's sort of how I began to realize, okay, they helped me a lot. Like, there were some big changes, and not necessarily things they had suggested, but things they suggested that made me look at something a different way. And it ultimately, it was like a domino effect.
You could have picked any subject in the world to tackle for 90 minutes. How did this story rise to the top?
Well, I have like a checklist of things that, if I'm going to work on a film for me, you know, not a paid, not some company paying me, like my actual personal films and the stories that I want to tell, there's like a whole checklist of stuff. There has to be some nostalgic element to it, some whimsical aspect to it. You know, it has to have interesting, funny, quirky people involved in it. All these different things. But ultimately what I'm doing is I'm using other people's stories to reveal something about myself. And I think people often don't think of that when they watch documentaries. They assume I'm watching this story. But the way I make them, I'm very much like, I'll take things out or put things in that may not necessarily be the best for the story, but it's supporting what I'm trying to do and share about myself. So that makes them very personal films that I'm very proud of, but sometimes people might scratch their head and be like, why was that one little moment in there? And it's like, well, that means something to me. But in terms of this story, I wanted to do a documentary about a drive-in just because I feel like they're very magical. there's not many left, so they're sort of fading out. And I actually looked into the Circle Drive-In, which is here in Dixon City. And I actually filmed with them for, I think it was like 2 days. But they were kind of too professional in a way. And you might go, well, what's the problem with that? It's more, I was looking for a struggle. I was looking for people who were very passionate, very quirky. The Circle Drive-In's very well run. They have great management. They have matching polos, and you know, that's great, and it works, and they're still in business doing awesome. So I was like, okay, this is okay. So I was shooting with them, but I wasn't falling in love with it. And then it was a friend of mine from high school said, well, I go to this drive-in in Lehighton. It's about an hour and a half away. It's called the Mahoning Drive-In. And he's like, it's pretty cool. They still only show movies on 35mm film. And I was like, really? He's like, yeah, they didn't have enough money to upgrade to the digital projectors. Because in 2014, every theater and drive-in had to upgrade to digital projectors in order to show newer movies. No movies now today are released on 35mm film, unless maybe it's Christopher Nolan or Quentin Tarantino. Like, they sort of obsess over that. But everyone else, it's digital. So they could only show old movies, which I found interesting. And then I met them, and I was like, these guys are awesome. These guys love movies. They love this drive-in. They were just oozing with passion. And I feel like that's way more interesting. You know, when someone is passionate and has not only values, but like just beliefs, like core beliefs, like a thesis statement, so to speak, which these guys totally have. It makes it more interesting. It makes it easier to want to see what's going to happen to them and root for them in a way.
And who is coming to see these old movies in cars at a drive-in where they're being screened like that?
The funny thing is, it's not really the local people. Most of the people who come every weekend are from, they make the trek, so to speak, because they've turned it almost into kind of like a retro grindhouse drive-in in a way. Like they'll have weekends where they show horror movies from the 80s or 70s. They do themed weekends. Currently, they're doing a VHS fest right now where they're actually like having a bunch of vendors come and sell VHS tapes. And it's interesting. Like they have themed weekends. People come dressed up. There's decorations. It's an event. It's an atmosphere. It's not just a movie you're coming to watch. So all of that sort of congealed together and sort of captured my interest in a way. And I could relate to these guys in certain ways. But it ultimately, when I started shooting and seeing what they were giving me, a new film kind of revealed itself.
That's wonderful, too, because you were listening.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I think you have to when you're making... I don't think you should go into a documentary with a, this is what I'm going to do. You should have ideas. You should have, you know, I want to explore these avenues. But to have it set up in a way where you know what A, B, and C is going to be, that just, to me, leaves out the possibility of sort of sporadic, random, just anything popping up. And that's usually the best stuff that you don't plan for. I didn't know I was going to meet Robert, who's in the film, and he's a patron of this drive and who goes almost every weekend. And he just talks constantly. Like, he just doesn't stop talking. So when I interview him, I'll ask him a question. He will turn that into a 15-minute answer where he goes off on all these like bizarre tangents. But it's interesting, and I loved it, and I could always talk to him. And I had not planned for meeting someone like him, but he sort of impacted me, so I put him in the film quite a bit, at least in the second half of the film. So he becomes sort of a big character in a way.
Without spoiling things, what kind of dramatic arc is there? Is there a race for a deadline? Is there something at stake that people have to come together to confront?
So ultimately, this drive-in was not raking in the money. You're showing old films. You have a they had a management change in 2014, and that was when they hit their lowest point. And the new manager, who was previously the projectionist for about a decade there, was trying to keep it going. And then he brought in these two young guys who literally by chance discovered this drive-in. And he brought them in. They were young, late 20s, early 30s. And he was around, like, you know, he's a baby boomer. So he didn't really understand social media too much. But these guys were like born into it almost. So they brought a new dimension to the drive-in where Jeff, the projectionist, was the classic film, old-fashioned feel, the 1950s. These guys brought sort of a retro 80s feel to it, but with modern social media. So that kind of boosted them a little bit. But they weren't, again, raking in the money. So it was sort of this year, this 2016 year that I followed them around for. I mean, if they lost money again, they would have, you know, the idea to go retro, essentially, which started in 2015, would have just, they would have had to come up with something new. If no one was coming out to see Friday the 13th or Goodfellas or Ghostbusters, Back to the Future, they would have to figure something else out. So it was sort of an important year, and it's a make or break kind of year. And then something surprising happens. They kind of discover something that sort of changes what the drive-in can be. So I won't spoil that, but it's at the end of the movie, kind of.
And what do we learn about our nation when we look at drive-ins, getting into a car, piling people into the trunk, going through and spending time together outside at night in the summer and things like that? What does that tell us about who we are or were?
Were, I think, is more, because there's only about 300 left. And there was about 4,000, between 4,000 and 5,000 at the height of it in like the late 1950s. You know, I think drive-ins are a unique experience, especially like even compared to a movie theater. It's not the same thing. It's much more, I feel, immersive. And not just because you're outside, but because you can move around. You could sit outside, you can sit inside, you can park in the back, you can park in the front, you can go into the concession stand. My favorite thing to do is getting up during the show and going outside, and you can hear everyone's radio collectively. So you could actually stand in the middle, no radio, nothing, no car, and watch the movie, and you can hear it collectively through everyone's radios. And it's just super interesting. I really like that. For some reason, it just suggests more of a community or a communal feel than going to the movies, which I love. Going to the movies is like my favorite thing to do. But you're very, in a movie theater, you don't want to talk to the people near you. You know, you try to get a seat, in, you know, an empty seat between you and the people next to you. You never want anyone sitting next to you that you don't know. And it's very quiet. It's very, it's almost like church in a way. The drive-in is more like an event. It's like a concert. You're encouraged to get up and move around and talk to people. And so it's a, yeah, I think it's a nice community thing that I wish was still around. And I think if people, more people experienced it, they would like it. I feel like everyone who goes to a drive-in loves it. I've never heard anyone go, man, drive-ins suck. Like, I've never heard that.
Your piece will be seen on television screens. Now, there will be big screens that people have at home. They're sure. Pretty big, but they're not like a screen in a theater. Have you had it broadcast before?
No, this will be the first broadcast. It's been playing at film festivals and just random movie theaters. We'd find local theaters here and there, some Alamo Drafthouse theaters, one in Virginia and one in New York screened it as well. So it's been fun watching it on a big screen with a group of people. I mean, there's nothing better. But I'm interested in seeing how it plays on broadcast, you know, on WVIA. Will people's, you know, is it a different experience? I think it is a different experience. So I'm hoping that people still enjoy it as much. I hope they will. Because audiences, I feel like after the movie, like watching it on that big screen, they always want to meet the guys after. You know, they always want to ask about the movie. So hopefully people in their living rooms have the same experience.
And you've been getting accolades.
It's surprising, you know, again, because this was kind of an experiment. And it's a very specific story. A lot of people are like, well, why did you just want to do it about them and not drive-ins in general? Because that kind of, that could draw in more people. And I said, well, that's been done. And I think this story is a great conduit into something else. You know, if you just strip away what's happening and think about the themes and the deeper stuff like that, I assure you it's there. Their story was perfect for that. So I didn't know if anyone would like the movie. And actually the first film festival I submitted to, it was a super late deadline and the film wasn't done yet. I'd say it was like 90% done, but there was a lot of like filler in there. So I would consider it a rough cut, and they didn't accept the film because I tried to get it on that very last day. So I'm like, oh, maybe this isn't very good. And then I went and I finished the film and started submitting it, and that's when it started getting into more film festivals. It won Best Local Feature at the Philadelphia Film Festival, so that was cool. You know, we played at the Savannah Film Festival, which, you know, they get over 4,000 submissions, and we were one of like 5 feature documentaries that they showed. So, I mean, that was surprising. It played at the Chinese Theater in Hollywood a couple weeks ago as part of the Dances with Films Festival. So that was neat. We went out there. It's like the most famous theater in the world. So that was pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, again, I don't know what it is. I don't know if people just who love movies are going to these festivals, but people always come up to us afterwards and there's an enthusiasm. There's something, and what I keep saying is they're falling in love with the guys. Because the film is really, they really put themselves on the line. You know, they don't hold back. It's not very corporate-y or proper. They're very raw, very candid. And I think people just enjoy them. You know, one it was funny. We went to one festival and the director of the festival came up to us after and he's like, love this movie, guys. I got to ask, though. He's like, one of yous has to be a jerk. He's like, you guys cannot be this likable in real life. And we were just like, I was like, honestly, this is, you know, and I got to know them. So I kind of broke the rule of documentary filmmaking where you aren't supposed to get close to the subject. But I got, you know, I became friends with all of them. So I can assure you they're all good guys. So people are just responding to them, I think. And the idea of a drive-in, I think it just hearing that kind of brings something out in most people, at least people maybe above 30. You know, I'm sure 15-year-olds might not have a connection to it, but I certainly get a lot of people on social media whenever I post something, always sharing their own drive-in memories, which has nothing to do with the post that I made, but they feel like they connect somehow, and so it's cool to see.
And I would recommend that people go to your website and look at those wonderful ones of Lancaster that you've done. Again, they have all that you have described about the whimsy and the nostalgia. And there's certainly a Minnelli magic, I think. You have a beautiful creative eye and a sense of poetry that is not cloying in any way, but it just makes the story multi-layered in a way that you can go back and look again and say, this is really a beautiful piece of creative work that tells me something maybe about Al, but also about who we are as folks, as human beings. And I'm sure that that's at the core of this film as well.
Oh, yeah. This is not a film about a drive-in or about a group of guys or about film. You know, there's a deeper theme to it. Every short or feature documentary I do, there has to be some aspect, something that I struggle with, something that I want to explore, and this film is certainly that. So if you sort of look into it and observe it beyond the surface story, you know, there's definitely stuff going on and reasons for certain things being put in there, and yeah, I think just watch it intently, I think you can form a connection with something or someone. I always say there's always going to be someone in this film that you can, I think, relate with or root for or connect to.
Award-winning filmmaker Alexander Minnelli from northeastern Pennsylvania speaking with us about his recent documentary At the Drive-In that will be broadcast for the first time in August on WVIA-TV. Air dates Thursday, August 2nd at 7:30 p.m., Sunday, August 5th at 2 p.m., and Saturday, August 11th at 9 p.m. To get those dates, wvia.org. WVIA.org. You can see the trailer at MonelliFilms.com. He's on Facebook as well. Minnelli is spelled M-O-N-E-L-L-I. Alexander, Al, Alex, Minnelli. MonelliFilms.com. And those air dates for At the Drive-In on WVIA-TV, Thursday, August 2nd at 7:30 p.m., Sunday, August 5th at 2 p.m., and Saturday, August 11th at 9 p.m. For the specifics, wvia.org, and check MonelliFilms.com.